Why is automation important?
Save time, you save money. We might think that marketing and sales is what's going to bring money into the business, but it's automation that's going to save the business time. Most trades businesses are selling time. They're selling the hour, they're selling the day, or they're selling the weeks. But ultimately, we are going to run out of time.
Automation. Unless you're a geek like me, you might not think it's the most interesting topic. In this episode, I want to change your mind. Automation makes you more productive. It's about removing the mundane, repeatable tasks and freeing you up to do the most important work in your business. And let's be clear, we're not talking about large-scale system changes. Instead, we focus on some simple strategies that you can implement to improve your business. Things like requesting reviews, booking in follow-up work so you don't miss out on recurring revenue. Tommy joins us and helps to explain how automation has saved him time and increased sales in his own business. We know business owners are busy, so we've separated the full interview into chapters. If you hover over the time bar, you can skip to the section you want to learn more about. The podcast is sponsored by Payaka, software that helps you sell more, organize your team, and save hours of time. Let's get into it. Okay, so we've talked about the sexy stuff, the marketing. Now it's a good time to talk about systems and automation, all that good stuff.
Oh, you're going to need some geeks for that,
mate.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why is automation important, Tommy?
Save time. Save time. We save money. You know, if there's that saying, time is money. So I argue that back. Well, if time is money, then surely money equals time. Mm. So we might think that marketing and sales is what's going to bring money into the business, but it's automation that's going to save the business time, because let's be honest, most trades businesses who this podcast is for, most of them are selling time. They're selling the hour, they're selling the day, or they're selling the weeks worth of work. So we only have so much capacity available to sell. Yes, you can go and hire new staff, get, you know, grow your team, but ultimately we are going to run out of time. So as much as what you need decent accounting software to look after your money and to be guided by a decent accountant, we need good software in place to make sure that we're making the most out of our time. And, you know, this software exists now to map out what it is that we're trying to achieve and systemize it. Mm-hmm. We no longer need that extra admin person to process more quotations, to chase up more invoices, because we can just systemize it all.
Mm. And yeah, and just to run through some examples of like some automation that we might be talking about, things that you can automate. Right, when someone like sends you a contact form on the website, you want to make sure that you're not going to be there ready to reply to them at that time, but they want to hear from you. You can automate that message going out to your customer saying, yeah, hey, I've got this. Also, here's some other information about my business, and there's the opportunity to that feeds into marketing as well. But there's other examples like, okay, you book an appointment with a customer. You want to send them a confirmation. Like, you want to send them a reminder like the day before, on the day that like this appointment's happening. And then later down the line, how do you get reviews and how do you automate that? And these are things that, you know, most people are trying to do, but they're trying to do by just remembering to do it. Mm. And like, that is just, humans are going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And so having a system in place not only means it's done, but it's done right and it's done at the right time.
Yeah, those automations are really important as well. To like the example that you gave there, there's like figures around the importance of like the speed of replying to those leads as soon as they come in. It's something like you're 80% more likely to convert them if you reply within the first 5 minutes. Automation allows you to hit those time frames, and it's going to be running throughout the times that you're not even working as well, or when you're spending time with the family. So not only is it like saving you the job of doing it, it's making sure you hit those time frames, and it's also working when you're not. So
yeah, well, we've also even like looked at that for our business as well, because I think a lot of people worry that if they go straight back to a customer, they're going to sound too keen, and they don't want to sound too keen. Mm. But actually, like, it's just so much more effective to respond to someone at the point that they're thinking about this problem. That is overwhelmingly better to act fast, react fast. And if you can automate that and also make it seem personalized as well, or personalize it, like put the customer's name in there. Think about something that we work on, like the heating accelerator with you, is that copy. Is like how the words you write, like make that customer feel comfortable, make you stand out.
Yeah. Mm. Personality. It's basically adding personality, your business, your business brand. What is a business brand? It's a logo, it's colours, it's a voice. What's a voice? We don't all have really clever adverts just speaking over the top of a video, but your voice can be what they read. The impression, the personality that your customers hear when they're reading a letter. It might be a printed letter, or it might be an email, or it might even be a text message. But the words that you use convey the personality of the brand. And I think, you know, that is something that a lot of people are missing. Does it have to be a big brand? Does it have to come across as, you know, the multi-million pound brand? It doesn't. It can be, you know, if we're talking to tradespeople, it can be that one-man band voice, if it's done in the right personality and if it's consistent.
Can you give us an example of that? Because I know you do, like, you have a certain sort of tone of voice with your...
A lot of the copy that I've written for Payaka Heating Accelerator, we'll open up with friend. Hello, friends, because ultimately that's how we want our customers to feel. And there's a little side note there that I don't really want the customers that expect you to be calling them sir or madam. You know, it's really no. My target customer kind of sit in the middle, and they, you know, they would be friendly people. I want to work for friendly people. Therefore, I will put forward that personality in the copy. As a side note, therefore, for PHA, for Payaka, and you know what we've wrote there, you can change that out. If you want to call them sir, if you want to call them mate, if you want to call them high five, yeah, you can change it. But it's all about automation. For me, the branding I'm trying to put across is a friendly personality, a friendly brand.
I guess you've also got to think about when you're, like, from a language point of view, just making sure that it's not super, like, it's clear as well. Like, remove that jargon that can be quite prevalent when you're looking at boilers and specifications and things like that. Like, I look at boiler specs when we're looking at items in Payaka, and I just think, I don't understand a lot of this. With language, it's like a really good opportunity for you guys as engineers to take that and be like, this is what this means. This is what it means to you as a customer.
But just note on that, you know, I hear you, because this is something that we talk about in the training often, is don't talk like an engineer to the homeowner. Don't be the engineer. Be the homeowner's next door neighbor that just so happens to be a specialist in whatever you do, but speak to them in layman's terms. However, different customers, different products are going to require a different language, potentially with, you know, heat pumps coming into... heat pumps and solar, for instance, coming in into the trading industries. Yes, they've been around for years, but it's going to ramp up.
Yeah.
There's going to be a certain type of customer where you have to talk like an engineer, that you have to talk specky. You have to give some facts. You have to use big words that you wouldn't normally use for your other customers. So wouldn't it be a lot easier if, as the customer lead comes in, we could just tag them? Know what type of customer journey are we taking them on? Is it going to be a shorter customer journey? Is it going to be longer? Or is each email going to have 200 words of copy, or is it going to have 1,000 words of copy? But it totally explains. It goes into depth. You know, when you come across them, we've all heard them in the trade industries. Yeah, I used to be an engineer. Normally, some guy in the 70s, 60s or 70s that did whatever they did. But they are the ones that are going to be scrutinizing every last letter and comma within your quotations. They're the ones that are going to see more value in adding in the specs, adding in that this white box is actually 600 mil this way and 450 mil that way. So give them the stats. Oh, it sounds a lot like a lot of hard work though, Matt.
Yeah, and
that sounded planted, but
I mean, ultimately, you need a system that enables you to do it. But the other thing is, I think a lot of people are going to feel quite overwhelmed because we are given rattling off all these examples and all this copy you've got to write and all that stuff. And like, I guess there's two things that we can add here. One is
simplify it.
Yeah, you don't have to do it all at once as well. You can just look at the things that you're doing all the time, or where are the things that are like falling through the gaps when we're talking about like confirming appointments, like sending reminders, whether that's to your customers or to your team. And just, if you've got a system in place that allows you to do it, you can just build it up over time. Mm. And like, we've got customers who've got loads and loads of automation. They didn't do it all overnight. And the other thing we can do is, you know, we work with you and we template stuff. So if you want help getting started, like you can do that. So it's not something that you have to put hours and hours of work in to get some value from. You can just build it up over time. But the one thing you do need is a system to do it.
Yeah, we spoke about it in a previous episode, like that compound effect. Like if you just do one thing every week over the course of a year, you've made 52 times improvements to your business. Like building out these processes isn't something you're going to be able to do overnight. Rome wasn't built in a day. Sorry, Tommy, I've stopped your line. but yeah, it is something that you need to work at, and like just accept the fact that it is going to take you a little bit of time, but it is worth the investment, because over time, like you're building a business that's going to be carrying you into the future. Mm-hmm. Like what you plan to do with that business. It needs to get you to where you want to go, and to make sure it goes in the right direction, you've got to be investing the time to make those improvements.
Keeping with that analogy, not with Rome, with, you know, your business getting you towards the destination that you want to go. Sometimes you don't know where the end destination is. You know it's in that direction, but you don't actually know where you are going to end up. Therefore, we need something that's going to be adaptable, that's going to allow us to twist and change and, you know, move up a gear if we need to, sticking with the analogies there. So, you know, when I'm trying to explain to people what a CRM is, it starts with customer, you know? Customer relationship management. It starts with customer. We need to understand what it is that we're trying to systemize and the reason why we're trying to systemize. And ultimately, it starts with customer. Mm-hmm. You need to start with there. You need to stop thinking about, does this software have this form attached to this? Does it allow me to track people's time? Does it enable the customer to see where the engineer is on route? Yeah, these are all nice, but they're asking it from the engineer's perspective. They're not asking the question of what that software was actually built for to start with, and that's to improve customer service.
Yeah, and I guess it's the most important thing here is the way that you can build that up over time. It's just, you can do one little thing now that will keep adding value to your business. And then the only other thing that we've talked about in another episode is, there is value beyond the value of it saving you time. It's the fact that you're then building up an asset, your business, that can run without needing you to do everything. And that means that at some point, most people will want to move on from the business, whether that's because they want to retire or they want to do something different.
Get into property.
Yeah, you may not even know that you want to do it, and you may never want to do it, but it gives you that option. It puts the option on the table. Like, do you want to be doing all these little jobs, all this little admin for the rest of your life, or even just employing someone to do that for you? It's like, well, you're just losing time and money to something that you could easily automate.
So that's obviously a really good point. But from our audience's point of view, there's going to be people listening that are maybe not quite so tech savvy as a lot of our users are. For that group of people, like, how would you approach them? Like, what do you say to them?
A pen. Not sponsored by any boiler manufacturer, by the way. A pen and paper. Start with what is simple. You know, we've got to think back to before CRMs came about. You know, many industries have been using CRM for years, but it's only really become popular in the trade industries for the last four or five years. But what were trade businesses doing before CRMs came along? It's not that we didn't have plumbers 10 years ago. We didn't have Sparkies 10 years ago. They existed, but they were running their businesses on systems that did not require software. Now, obviously, we're encouraging them, look, this software does exist now. You should start using it, and here are the benefits why we should use it. But to get you starting them, it all starts with a pen and paper. Simple systems. It's thinking about what are the 10 things that I spend the most time in my business doing? Right. This is what the problem is. What is the answer? Is there an answer? If you don't know the answer, maybe a little bit of research on YouTube and you'll find an answer. Maybe you'll find a piece of software that's actually telling you what it is, you know, what your problem is. In our training, we often talk about the van checklist. Very, very simple. You know, we didn't want an engineer to be having to think about everything that was going to happen on that job. And we wanted to pass a bit of responsibility onto the apprentices. So there you go, lads. Van checklist. Before the van leaves today, you are confirming Bobby, okay? Bobby has to confirm that we've got all the stuff ready for the day, okay? Simple, simple, simple stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a problem. Here's the answer, okay? Mm. Now can we put it into the system? Can we put it into the system to make it faster, to make it more efficient, to make sure that you don't get to that job and Bobby forgot to pick out the 45-degree flu elbow? And therefore losing you time, because it's not just Bobby that's got to stop the time. It's the engineer that's got to stop the time to go to the merchants to pick up the flu elbow.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be complicated.
But I guess the other thing, though, about like that system is what you've covered there is a lot of the engineer's point of view. But
yeah.
Another necessity, another reason why you need to, you know, join the century and like have software to run your business is because customers' expectations are that they can buy stuff online and it's very easy and they can click on what they want and they can sign it and they can pay and all that stuff. And if you're presenting them with a handwritten quote, that is putting up a barrier to them like going and, you know, giving you work because it's harder. It's not how they want to buy.
Oh, yeah.
It's not, you know, so a system does more than just deliver what you need internally for your business. It delivers a bunch of value to your customer, which means they're more likely to choose you, they're more likely to come back to you, they're more likely to pay you more.
Yeah, I think like from the point of view of those customers that aren't so tech savvy, like I guess like my takeaway from the points you guys have just made there is, Tommy, you were saying the word simple time and time and time again. Like that is it's funny because that's actually one of our business values. It's like everything we do is designing for simplicity. So just because it has been built into a product, it doesn't mean it's going to be super complicated. In fact, that's the sign of a badly built process. And it is, I would say to people that don't feel that they're as tech savvy, is it's not going to be as complicated as you think it is. Look at the end result that you're aiming for as well. We're looking, like, customers expect these things, so the result is worth it. But also to help you get there is a ton of support. We've got communities, you've got video content. We've been talking about video content a lot. It's something that we live by. So there's loads of materials to help you get there, plus support as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other two values that we have, transparency, that's super important. Like, you use that as something that you rely on. It means you're not worrying about, like, the way that you're saying something. It is just, you are just being honest, you're being transparent. And then the other one is taking action, and that's a big theme as to like all of these episodes that we're talking about, is don't just sit here, watch this and think, you know, at some point next year, I'll wait till I'm too busy right now,
too busy,
I'll look at this after Christmas or, you know, in the summer or like whenever. Just take action now, because you can just do one little thing and that takes you on a step forward. And like, if you don't do it now, you're never going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. You think about if you put it off, if you say to yourself, I'm going to put it off for 2 months, 3 months, until, you know, until the other side of Christmas, the other side of Easter, until the summer, until after that stag party, you know, that's when I'll do it. Well, the thing is, it'll probably get pushed back again. And then a podcast like this will pop up again in 6 months' time, and it'll kind of remind you that, bugger, I said that I was going to do that, but now you're 6 months behind.
Yeah,
and all the competition, everybody's moving on to it.
And there's always going to be something more important, that's something that seems more important in that moment. Like, they're like, always. You're never going to get a point where you're like, oh, actually, I've got nothing to do now. I'll like do that like long-term investment planning, you know, just do it now is all I'd say.
Absolutely.
So we listed a few automations at the start, just examples, but Luke, looking at some of the customers that we currently work with, what are some of your sort of favorite automations where our customers have taken that blank canvas that we've given them on top of the templated ones and created their own?
Yeah, I mean, two immediately come to mind. The first one was the reviews, requesting reviews. So I think it was probably John Boswell that I think came up with that one. It was so once the service had been completely provided and invoice paid, it's then automating that email to collect those Google reviews, collect those Trustpilot reviews. So that obviously continues to build their brand.
And just to give some detail on that before you do the second one there, the Google one, what he was doing was like, because you need to have a Google account to leave a Google review. So as part of the automation, he was identifying a condition that the customer had an email address that had like a Gmail email address. And then that was automatically messaged that customer asking them for a Google one. Yeah. Whereas if they didn't have a Google address, then he would send a message asking for a Trustpilot review. And that within our system, you put in there the BCC like Trustpilot address, which then Trustpilot then reach out to that customer, and he had like all this set up. So
so that automatically collects like verified reviews from Trustpilot, which is a big thing. And then the second one, this is a little bit of a cheat, I guess, but it was Ryan Andrews who'd set up the automated response on his social accounts when a lead messaged them a response. He would have an automated message that flashed up with a link to his lead form that drops him straight into Packer, and then that triggers all of the other automations you've got as a result of the heating community. So that's I really like that one. Yes. So yeah, those are my two favorites.
And Tommy, like you've created some as part of the Pack Heating Accelerator to cover the whole customer journey for installations, for services.
5,000 words so far.
With all the marketing copy and sales copy, follow-up copy, whatever you like.
About 100 images as well so far.
That was
2.0.
Yeah, absolutely.
5,000 words.
But what
is that 5,000 words?
It's increasing. It's inflation for you. What about you? Do you have any favorite automations that you've got?
Thanks for payment. I mean, obviously, in them 5,000 words, there was a lot more words that went with thanks for payment. But as an automation, once they've come in that customer journey, they've had fantastic customer service all the way along. Your customer knew exactly what was happening every single step of the process.
Yeah.
And then thank you for payment, because that's when money's hitting the bank.
So that one is such a necessity that that's just built into Payak. You don't even have to set that up. That will happen anyway. So always thinking. I mean, some others we've seen people set up follow-ups on quotes. So you've sent a quote out. When you've triggered that, that's saying checking the customer's got all the information they need. And that triggers like them to make that decision, reminds them that you went out and quoted. Without you having to do anything, you're not phoning them up to have to ask them about it. Like, it's already automated. We also, not only for sending communications, but you might actually want that deal to automatically move through your pipeline. So say the appointment being booked is a stage in your pipeline, you might set up an automation that says like when that booking is made on that deal, we call it within the system, then that automatically progresses that deal through your pipeline, so it's in the next stage. So when someone's looking, seeing okay, where is everything in that pipeline that we've talked about in another episode, like what's there, like, and you're not having to think about manually moving it through, because it will be driven by the actions that either your customer takes or you take internally. But yeah, there are hundreds and hundreds of other possibilities.
There's all sorts of possibilities, but again, it comes back to just keep it simple and think about what is it that you're trying to achieve. Simplify it, pen and paper, and think, right, and this is a customer journey. And you know, it's been common, if you go onto any social media group, onto any Facebook group, and you ask a bunch of tradesmen who delivers great customer service, they're all going to say yes. If they say no, they're having a little joke, aren't they? They're trying to know, get a tap on the back from the mates. Oh no, my customer service is rubbish. But they're all generally going to put their hands up and say, right, yeah, I deliver great customer service. All right then. So what is it that you do to deliver great customer service? And this will be, all right, you know, I've got boot protectors on. We put carpet protectors on. We turn up on time. We send the quote the same day or whatever it is. We do a good job. We have nice pipework. Very, very shiny nice, shiny pipework.
Yeah. I think only engineers appreciate that.
But they don't look at the other areas of their customer journey. And that's where the possibilities just become absolutely unlimited on how you will get one step up on Paul the plumber.
Mm.
Paul the plumber, John the electrician, you know, Gary the kitchen fitter. Making them up. I've never met Gary the kitchen. Kathy the electrician, yeah. How do you get one up on them? It's not necessarily about what you do the day that you're in the customer's house.
Mm.
It's everything that they read and everything that they felt from the very first moment they contacted your business to the last moment when the job's been done and all the final paperwork's gone through.
Yeah.
It's how what they think about your business. And there's the possibilities of, well, how many stages are in the customer journey? I think we've got 12 for boiler installation.
But another very, very important one that we've not even mentioned is if you're doing like an installation, or it could be like any product, if you've got that service option and you've got that ability to go back and service that product that you've installed, you set up that automation, that means that in a year's time or whatever time frame it is that you need that to happen, that automatically messages the customer and it automatically drops a new deal into your pipeline for that customer, so that you know that is a new opportunity. We've talked about it in another episode, like the chances of converting that existing customer, and then
50 to 60, I think. Yeah,
okay,
something like that.
That's inflation again for you. but like a new customer is more like 25. So the point is, there's a big gap there. So you having that system in place that means you continue to get that recurring revenue from that existing customer base that you have is so important.
Mm.
So everyone wants to get paid, right? So it's obviously a super important topic. It's something that clearly is an important part of any software solution, something we do, but what's your view on the best ways to take payment as a trades business?
Get paid as fast as possible. Yeah, not to delay it, not to, I will email the invoice to you on Monday. You know what I mean? Putting it off until you've got some office time. You've finished the work. The customer should have already agreed to what work they're having done and how much it's going to cost. And as soon as the work's done, it just needs to be one button on your phone to send over to them, basically, giving them the information that they need to allow for the quickest possible payment into your bank. Mm. That's what we need. Because if we don't have that in place, you run the risk of getting paid slowly. I.e. when Sue's come back from her holiday in 2 weeks' time. We've seen that many, many times. Or not getting paid at all. So the quicker we can get that request for payment out to the customer, the better.
And there's like a couple of standard ways that people take payment. There's three. Okay, there's the cash option. Yeah,
didn't get paid.
I didn't get paid. So
the best, I didn't get paid. Yes.
Yeah. So obviously, no one does that. And then the other two are that both have their pros and cons. Are taking payment by card, or taking payment via a bank transfer.
Yeah.
So I guess pros of the card option is faster for them to pay. You know, you can like, it's, you know, if someone's got Apple Pay, Google Pay turned on their phone and you've sent them that invoice immediately while they're there, they can just tap it and it's done, it's paid.
Yeah.
You are going to get paid on average faster, and we hear that reported. Downsides, of course, is that you're paying fees on that, right?
Yeah, so typically, if it's like a $2,000 settlement payment that's coming in, that's a chunk.
Mm. But it could be worth it because you know you're going to get paid faster, and you know this is going to be totally automated. I'm not going to be worried about it. Whereas, yeah, the other option, like a bank transfer, it's likely to cost you less to get done, but there's extra manual steps to typically that you'd need to go through. Yeah. So you actually need to have confirmation that that money has entered your bank account to then like generate the receipt. And like we enable both as part of Payaka. But sometimes people, I think, fret about like having these different options. But actually what we'd say and what we've seen the most success with is have both.
Yeah, it's how your customer
exactly
wants to
just
do.
Thinking
again,
about
it comes
it from
back
their
to customer.
Point of view. Yeah,
it comes back to customer.
Yeah,
give them the options, but give them the option to make their decision quickly and to make that payment quickly. But often, you know, I think that can come back into your terms and conditions. And as long as we don't surprise the customer by dropping something on them at the last moment that they didn't expect. If they know what the process was at the beginning of the process, because you laid out, this is step 1, 2, 3, 4, and then John will ask for payment at this point. And once you've sent payment, John, at this point, then we'll do step number 5. As long as they know that all the way along, when it comes to stage 4, I'm making up, by the way, it could have been 9 stages, it comes to stage 4, and you make that request, John is ready and waiting with his credit card or his laptop to do the bank transfer.
I mean, I quite often see this because I like to hang out in like trades Facebook groups, but quite a lot of the time you do get people moaning about not getting paid. And yes, like some customers are going to be difficult, but a lot of the time there's a lot of stuff that you can do to like, they didn't actively go into this thing, I'm not going to pay or I'm going to take a long time, but you've sort of made it easy for them to like take a long time because maybe you took a few days before you sent out the invoice and like didn't make it easy for them to pay the way that they wanted to pay.
Yeah.
Because you're only looking at it from your point of view. All you're doing is getting paid slower and then going onto Facebook to moan about it. And like, who's that helping?
Yeah. They do tend to get in their own ways quite a bit by not speeding up the invoice process. What, like, this is one of the questions I want to pass to you, Tommy, actually, is around payment. Is I also see in the Facebook groups that we frequent, we all
don't kick us out.
we see people moaning about customers, like questioning the amounts as well.
Yeah.
I don't always agree with that gung-ho approach of just like, just bin them off and move on to the next one. I think like if a customer's questioning the payment, there's a few things that could have happened. You mentioned there about setting expectations along the way so that they understand what's going on. But I just wanted to like run that past you and get your thoughts on it.
My thoughts are, I mean, if it's a pool installation, that's a pretty big job, isn't it? Do we know any pool guys? I know it's big in America.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Payaka will be going to America one day soon.
We have a couple of customers in America.
Okay, so it's a pool, it's a heat pump, it's a solar installation. These are all big jobs, obviously central heating jobs, quite easily $3,000 to $4,000 in. I disagree with there's the full amount. Mm. It's inclusive of that, it's £3,400. And a semi breakdown of these are the parts that you're getting, but no indication of how much them parts cost. I disagree with that. Yeah. I think we need to give the customers some sort of value amounts. You know, they don't know, for instance, they understand I need a boiler, I understand that I need a flue. I understand that I need a magnetic filter. I understand that I need a control. They know all this, but what they don't know and understand is the other bits and pieces that is required in order to make this a legal installation. So it's, you know, the difference between getting a quotation from Paul the plumber, keep coming back to Paul. Paul the plumber, where he's just given a price and it might be a few hundred pounds less than the price that you've given. But Paul the plumber might have missed out some important things that would have made it, you know, legal. Whereas if you can itemize and show, let's pick a customer's name, Graham.
Yeah, women are available too. Joanne.
Sandra.
Sandra.
Joanne. Yeah, nice name, Joanna. Yeah, very nice. So Joanna needs to see that the reason why this quotation is an extra £500, but you're highlighting, yes, but this part doesn't meet regulations. We need to install this. That costs £300 and this costs £200. And then when Joanna looks, coming back to Joanna, gets the two quotes out side by side, she can clearly see that this quote has more value in it, and this quote, I don't know what value in. And if they don't know, you're casting, you know, you're sowing seeds of doubt. Yeah. They don't trust you.
Yeah.
So it's all about,
yeah, so that,
you know, we don't have to say right down to the copper elbow, do we? Mm. Right down to the 25 meters of cable. We don't have to do that.
Mm. You mentioned payment terms.
Uh-huh.
What's your view on taking deposits up front?
Absolutely. 100% you should do.
How much?
Can I make this more clear? Absolutely. I see some thoughts and discussion about people saying, you know, they wouldn't take a deposit for less than £500 or less than £1,000. Yeah, I can see this, you know, small amounts of money doesn't really need the extra, you know, the extra work potentially or the added potential mistrust. I don't know, you know, we're thinking a bit deep on that. But for most types of work where you don't have to pay 100% up front, a boiler service, for instance, yeah, an electrician's EICR, if I've got that the right way around, why shouldn't you charge up front? It's £100. You know, you're lots of things that you're booking. Sometimes you've got to pay for the dentist up front now. So why shouldn't you ask a customer who's booking your time for an hour that you can take payment up front? I know a lot of the industry doesn't do it, so we'll just move that to one side. But if a job is going to be costing more than £1,000 or £2,000 or £5,000 or £10,000 and 50% of that job is going on your business neck to go to the merchants and order materials, why should you not be taking the equal amount in a deposit or keep things simple 50-50?
And is that what you're saying? What do you say to the customer? Are you saying it's for materials or...
Yeah,
Do you explain it?
The exact line, if I can remember this correctly, in order to order your boiler and materials, we will require a 50% deposit 48 hours before the installation date. Now that's quite a...
So you wouldn't take it when the quote is accepted?
We didn't. No,
yeah.
We didn't.
So I'd say that you should do that.
For us, we was building on the trust, you know. They almost give them like that cool-off period that perhaps they said yes, but then 2 days later decided that it wasn't for them. Well, if they decided that it wasn't for them, and it's not happened very often to us, you didn't really want them as a customer anyway. You don't want to take their money if they don't want to give it to you.
Mm.
But that 48-hour... the installation date for us has worked for years.
Mm.
We've never really had much problem with it. And 50%, you know, you've got to do the bank transfer or you've got to get your credit card out once. What's the difference between whether it's 48% or 52%? Unless you're voting for something political. You know, it's a 50-50. You've got to make a deposit payment and you've got to make the settlement payment.
Yeah.
Nice and easy.
Let's take it back, even further back. What about charging for quotes?
Oh, that's a can of worms.
Mm.
I don't think I've ever been charged for a quote.
So, I mean, this...
Back in the day, yeah.
I mean, this is an interesting one because, like, if it's a simple job, right, okay, maybe...
I think we need a beer. This should be a 4 o'clock chat. This should be with a beer.
But I've come out to do a simple quote. It's still my time, right? So, you know, in any other industry, you might do that. But this particularly comes in with the more complex jobs. So in heating, it's the heat pump installations, things that, like, are really complicated to spec correctly and is a whole, like, consultation. If you think about, like, building an extension... you're going to be paying like the structural engineer to come and like create that spec. You're going to be doing it, but it doesn't necessarily always translate now to other industries that maybe have got a bit more complicated. So maybe you should be charging for your time if it's a big investment.
Yeah. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. Do I think it's going to happen in most trades? No, I don't think it's going to happen in most trades. Funny enough, you've got to pay the architect.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, the architect, the structural engineer.
And the architect, fair enough, has gone to university and got a few letters after his name. Do we know what it is?
No idea.
I don't know. I'm not sure. That's a sideline.
They've gone to university, educated themselves, and set up in business as an architect. Why are they guaranteed to get paid for their plans, yet the heating engineer or the renewable engineer or the electrician engineer do not get paid for their plans?
I think it's just because they've not asked. I think if I was getting a spec done for a heat pump installation and someone said it's X amount of money to do this consultation to make sure that we get the right spec for you, I don't think I'd like battle eyelid at it. I think that's reasonable.
I brought this up with Adam Patrick at Heat Geek, and what they told me is this does exist, that it is going to start coming in. It's a German-led thing, that in Germany that you get the people, the engineers that are specing the system, and then you get the labour, basically. He did say that this is looking like it may filter through to the UK. So fingers crossed. Domino effect, if that does come in for heat pumps, for renewable heat, maybe other trades would be in a position to do it. Fingers crossed.
Interesting. I think just coming back to an earlier point that you made about like breaking down a quote and putting like various like different prices on different items, one thing that we kind of allow people to do is to choose whether you hide those line item prices. Yeah. And I know you've said that you don't think that's the right way to go. And particularly it gets a bit complicated if you want to add in like multiple choice or optional extras, because you are telling the customer it's going to be this amount more like to add this thing on.
Yeah.
So you've sort of told them part of the information, and when you've sort of hidden some stuff but not hidden other stuff, it I'm not sure that communicates like the trust that you want to communicate. So I agree with you. I think the best way to do it is to give some level of breakdown that gives that confidence, but the option is there.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't have to be 20 lines, does it? But you know, the most important, however, you know, most important five or six lines, the things that are definitely going to add value to the installation, save the customer money, make sure that they're meeting building regulations, the important stuff. For me, you just need to factor in the installation cost and the risk factor that goes along with it. You know, we have to fit the magnetic filter. We have to use the flue extension. I'm sorry that I'm talking so much to heating engineers, okay? We have to use the flue extension, otherwise the gases won't get outside the property. This is non-negotiable. We have to put that on the quotation. But that fancy radiator in the kitchen, it's not needed. It's a nice to have. Yeah. So, you know, you've got a bit of room there to think, well, we don't have to install this as part of the main job. This is just a little upsell. It's a little bonus. But a lot of people will try making more money on markup, won't they?
Yeah.
They'll do markup, and some people will say, well, it's the cost to install this.
Yeah. I mean, there are absolutely like different ways to price something up, and I think that's where good quoting software comes in, and there are those different ways to do it. And like so one way that we can help people is you bring in all your live materials from your supplier, from your favorite supplier, whether that's one we've integrated with or not, put together the materials that you need, create the package that is sold to the customer, and then base your price on a markup on those materials.
And
then maybe you deal with labor separately. That's another topic, actually. Like, would you recommend splitting out labor as a separate line item, or is that something that you would expect to be included?
Personally, no. Not for me. We have been asked it many times. I guess I would come back to what a lot of heating engineers will talk about as well. You know, if you put your labour costs, they're ultimately going to find someone who's going to offer cheaper labour.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, it's all a lot to be talking about perceived value and how you're presenting yourself. But I would definitely feel if the customer was insisting that they know what your labour price is, my gut feeling is the customer's just looking for the cheapest. And therefore, you know, they're not looking at what the bottom line is. They're not looking at this package with this value is going to cost you £2,800. What they're more concerned about is I'm only getting paid £15 an hour in my job, and you're trying to squeeze me for £100 an hour. That's not the type of customer that I'd be interested in doing work for.
And I actually agree with you from a customer's point of view that if I'm getting a quote that is essentially the value to me is the package of this thing installed in my house with whatever like maintenance
which has these parts
exactly
which has yeah. these parts which are semi yeah
and then the
down.
Point the parts that I care about, because I don't care about like each individual little bit, but maybe I care about the thing that you can tell me you need this magnetic filter because it's going to do this, or yeah. like you need this, or we recommend this smart thermostat because it's going to save you this amount of money over time.
That fancy radiator that you want in the kitchen.
Well, because it's going to look nice.
That's another £330.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, upsell, downsell, we could just put in a cheap standard radiator, which is going to save you £210.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you've gone from one asking about the yeah. you know the fancy nicety. But we've told you, in order to give you your necessity,
yeah.
to give you the boiler, to give you the heating, the warmth, to give you everything that makes this installation legal, that's going to cost this much. Now, this little nicety, do you have the money for it?
Mm.
It's going to cost you this. Or we can downgrade that and we can just give you a standard yeah. radiator.
I mean, that's interesting. Most people look at it and they go, this is the standard option. This is how much more it is if you want this option. It's perfectly valid to take the other approach and say,
absolutely.
Like, this is the super deluxe install, like with all the like fancy radiators or fancy radiator. If you want the more basic one,
if you,
it's
if you want something with a little less oomph,
yeah.
John, a little
yeah,
less oomph,
yeah, yeah, it's going to save you £40. Oh, it's only going to save me £40. It's like a £3,000 job. Like, you know, who cares? Like, but maybe they're like, yeah, it's just below £3,000. I don't want to add anything else on. So and there's interesting psychology there, I think, for sure.
Upsell, downsell, yeah. cross-sell.
But you can test it, right? You can do either and see how that works over time. So I think, like, good quoting software is super, super important. But I was just doing some, like, quick calculations just to walk through an example. Like, because there's basically, like, two things that I think good quoting software does. It increases your conversion rate. Meaning it is more likely that a customer is going to choose to go with you, and increases your average job value if you're able to have those upsells. So, I mean, just to walk you through a simple example. So you get like 100 new leads in per month. And like what would like typically, let's say you convert 25% of them and your average job value is £3,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you like 25 of those that you're selling a month, total revenue of £75,000. So let's say you increase that conversion rate by 10%. So you go from 25% to 28% of the quotes that you're coming through.
I'm having to trust you on your numbers here because I left
okay.
my phone on,
okay.
on charge.
Anyone can like double check this. So that's just like an extra 2.5 sales, okay, average per month. That's just with a tiny like increase in that conversion rate. So that, just on its own basis, is like £7,500 additional every month, just from moving from 25% conversion rate to 28% conversion rate. That seems pretty small. If on top of that, I say, because I've got that upsell in there, say, let's say my average job value increases by 10%. So instead of like £3,000, it's £3,300, right? That's taken my like average amount of money that I'm going to take in each month up to nearly £16,000, like £15,750. Tiny increases in both conversion rate and average job value.
Yeah.
That makes such a massive difference to your bottom line. So just laying that example out there, every month you're bringing in nearly 16k additional on top. So the investment is just so worth it.
No, absolutely. You've just got to commit to it, aren't you? Make the time. Now, you know, whatever it is that's going to change your business. You know, the other day we were speaking about marketing. Today we're talking about automation. You know, it's investing into the bits of your business that your competition do not invest into. Hmm.
It's another example of the compound effects that we've been discussing. Yeah. You make small changes here. Like earlier, the example was just like making a small change to your business, like once a week. Within a year, you've made 52 times improvements. Like throughout your sales journey, if you're making small compound changes to like your conversion and the value that you're bringing in per job, at the end of it, then those compound effects all add up, and your take home pay goes up quite considerably when you look at it. So yeah, compound effects like a huge thing that like these systems actually provide you.
And you can keep if you've got the system in place, it allows you to keep tweaking stuff over time.
Yeah.
So it means those little percentages you can keep moving up and keep track it. You need a way of tracking it as well. So otherwise there's no point, right? Because you're just guessing and yeah.
If it can be measured, it can be improved.
Not sure Luke Johnson was the first man to say that, but
I'm pretty sure he was.
So I guess one important aspect of a business is like you need to be able to turn your computer on at the start of the day, whatever it is, and see what is most important in your business. Is that something that you use in your business or you have done in the past?
Absolutely, except back then we was looking at information across several different areas. Now I would have to try to combine all that information together, not just on a daily basis, but certainly on a quarterly basis. I'd be doing a great big data dump of getting all my data together and, you know, taking half a day out to analyze the data to help me make decisions on where is the business, where is it going, and where do I want it to go. So data analysis is something I've spoken about for years. However, wouldn't it be great if we could just have one dashboard, one cockpit, if you want to fly planes, where all the information that you need for your business is there in a snapshot. No, there's always going to be more information out there, but what is the most important information that you need to look at to make action on a daily, a weekly, a monthly, or even a quarterly period? So I'd like to investigate. Well, what's the power?
Yeah.
What are the software options that are out there to simplify business for tradespeople and lifting the hood a little bit? You know, what is currently built into PayAcca and where is it going?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I think this is something that is very much evolving over time. Right now, what we've defined as the most important things for your business is at the top. Like, you load up the page and you've got high level metrics that tell you how you're performing over the last 30 days. So whether it's quote conversion rate or like revenue secured.
Yeah, yeah.
The previous 30 days, and with a little graph that you can see there. So you can say, okay, am I on the right track? Am I doing better in this last 30 days in a rolling period compared to the last? So it just gives you the high level view. How am I doing right now? Then we've got what events are booked in, like what customer bookings, what's happening, when is stuff happening, what's happening today, what's happening after that.
Yeah.
And then we try to surface things that you need to take action on. So that might be, I've drafted a quote, I need to send it out. A customer's told me they've made a BACS transfer, and this needs to be confirmed, and then the receipt is automated. There's anything that you need to do right now or be aware of, this invoice payment's overdue, and then you can just dive straight into that deal and see the information there. Now, I'm sure there is lots more stuff that we want to add in, people would like to see in there, and things that, you know, as we put them in there, maybe you can then customize it. Because as you say, like, every business is different and you might want to see different things and you might want to adapt what that dashboard looks like. So that's absolutely like stuff that we've got planned in there. I mean, what else would you say? other than those examples you want to be seeing on a daily basis? Because ultimately, this is your like top level view of.
Sure. Well, you know, everybody is will always look at the money thing, which is an obvious thing. You know, we need to be looking at the money situation daily. In a previous podcast, we spoke about the pipeline, talking about, you know, where the customers are in the deal. And just a side note on that, like, for instance, if we're not tracking this, we can't see that quotation that we sent out 3.5 weeks ago worth £4,000. We sent it out four weeks ago, but we've not heard from the customer, or you've not followed up with the customer.
Yeah.
So being able to see details like that on a pipeline, what's that going to be worth per year?
Mm.
Could be worth tens of thousands of pounds. But on a daily basis, marketing, it's something that I don't think is spoken about enough. People look at the money side of things. There's even, you know, you tracking the time, how long you're in the customer's house, how long you're spent driving to the customer's house, how long you're spent on admin, putting the quotation together. This all ultimately comes back to, how much are you making per day, per hour, per week, serving that customer, that particular customer, or even that group of customers? You know, if we break down customers into A, B, C, D, who's your most profitable group of customers? I don't know. Then with the expensive car on the front. No. We need to like really drill down onto, you know, splitting up the customers into different groups before we can understand who the most profitable is for our business. Now, you know, I'm aware that in Payaka we can tag customers. You can invent the tags to say whatever you want to name them. Customer A, B, C, C, D, blue, red, yellow, pink, you know. So marketing, certainly. What would be good going forward is being able to track your team, you know, because that's the other part, I think, from a business owner's point of view. I've spoke about, well, what is a CRM system? A CRM system is fundamentally there for customer service, but the back end of CRM is management. So for them people that are on, you know, you're just looking after you and maybe another team member, it's a bit easier to kind of calculate this just by using your eyes. But the more that the business starts to grow, you've only got one pair of eyes. And there's a lot of work going on. So having a system in place that can actually track time, money, profitability, callbacks, simple callbacks, you know. These are all, you know, these are all solutions that are in lots of other industries, but not really common in the trade industries.
Yeah. And I think one important thing to point out, though, is when you start getting into this, you can create loads and loads and loads of metrics. At some point, you're just going to be overwhelmed by all these metrics, and you need to be clear that, like, I really believe like a metric needs to be something that you can take action on. If you're not going to take action on that thing, really, like, why are you looking at? Maybe it's something you look at on a monthly basis just to check that this thing's okay. But like the majority of the time, in a dashboard is the most important things. That's probably like, it's less like 10 or less metrics, like probably less.
So this comes back to the analogy of what do I need to see? I can only, my field of view is only this big. What is the most important stuff that I need to see today? All the other information is hidden.
Yeah, wherever. And maybe you do
press
look
that
at
button,
that,
and it gives me all this information. But I just want to argue slightly, where if we could rewind that tape for 60 seconds, where you said, if you are not going to take action, then what's the point? Here's my situation. I have a hunch, okay? I have a hunch that something's not quite right. I have a hunch that something is not quite as profitable. Although that, if I'd have seen that data 3 months ago, 6 months ago, I was not ready to take action. The fact that I can get access I can get access at the point that I'm ready to make the decision, or at the point that I'm wanting to investigate, because that hunch might be wrong.
But you do have an intention to take action there. And I do think then it just comes down to, okay, what are the metrics that you need to be looking at on a daily basis, which are probably different to those that you look at on a weekly basis, probably different to those in a quarterly, monthly. Yeah. Like whatever, it's going to be different. And the other thing to be careful of that I see people doing a lot in any business, not just trades, is it like overinterpreting noise in data. Mm. Like on a like day-to-day basis or week-to-week basis, you're going to have natural random variations in data, especially when you're dealing with relatively small numbers. Mm. Do be careful
and of that. Seasonal business.
I think probably people are more likely to take that into account, because when you're thinking seasons, you are thinking quite long term. But I see people like, why is this metric down or up this week? And then if you were to like zoom out and look at that metric over like the whole year, it just does that from week to week. And it's like, well, it's long-term trends that are important here. That's it for this episode. I hope you found the information we shared useful. If you'd like any support on the topics covered, leave a comment below the video or head over to the Payacca website and we'd be happy to help. Thanks for watching. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please support the channel by subscribing and liking the video.